This is Amarin's.
Hi everybody, this is Arthur, and welcome to episode 24. Last Friday I was talking about get through and preparing for emergencies. Well, it turns out that that may not have been such a bad thing to talk about. We are in the midst of severe storms in the upper part of the North Island at the moment, and so at some stage you may hear winds blowing and carrying on and so on, or the power may go out completely. Hopefully it won't, but we'll see how we go. Also, last time I talked about the tornadoes in Taranaki, and at the time they thought that Wednesdays was bad, Thursdays not so bad. Well, it turns out that wasn't the case. Once everything was all seen in the light of day, it turns out that, taken together, the tornado storms, were now considered pretty much the worst tornado event that had happened in New Zealand's history. But that wasn't enough. Oh no. Nature then threw flash floods into the mix, and so the region was pretty well hard hit. But now it's the upper North Island's turn. Up in Northland, they received in 12 hours as much rain as they normally get in a month. And being driven by high winds, there's extensive flooding all over the region, and a state of emergency has been declared up there. Northland is the section of New Zealand that is the topmost of the North Island, and is that little sliver that points north. Here in Auckland, and also in the Coromandel, which is to the east of us, they are predicting a total of 150 millimeters of rain between now and Wednesday afternoon. 150 millimeters is roughly 6 U.S. inches. So we're talking about a lot of rain. The major problem, though, is wind, and they're predicting gusts of up to about 120 kilometers per hour, which would, be around 75 miles an hour or thereabouts. I'm not sure. So they're rather severe storms going on at the moment. There have been power outages, certainly in Northland, and there have also been a few around here, although localized power outages in storm situations aren't uncommon. I mean, very often there'll be an accident where somebody hits a transformer and causes all sorts of problems or what have you. So there's a lot going on weather-wise at the moment, and I was out in some of it today. I had to take our little puppy Jake in for his last of his puppy jabs, so he's all sorted now, and the vet reports that he's in excellent health. He's feeling a little sorry for himself at the moment, as dogs often do after they've had their jabs. But yeah, everything is going well in that regard. There is, however, one little thing. On Sunday, Nigel and I went to get a carpet cleaner, because puppies do make accidents, and you do need to be able to clean them properly. And it is a removable tank. We set that aside and whatnot. But Jake found the rest of the machine, and he decided it would be a good idea to chew up the filter and a little seal without which the machine is useless. So right now we're trying to see if we can get replacement parts for it, because if we can't, we're going to have no alternative but to throw the thing away and buy a new one, which is especially a shame, partly because it's good, but also because it was a good price. But, you know, these things happen. You can't dwell on them. You can't sit around and feel bad about it or whatever. You just have to move on. And we are. Now, most of what I actually wanted to talk about today was in the comments section for a variety of reasons. And so I'm just going to go ahead and go right into that. First up this time was Archer, who said, "As you were describing all the things you have to gather and put aside for an emergency, reminded me of Y2K when we were told to do the same thing, and then the same after 9/11 when we had to be prepared for an attack. Oddly strange, I never got anything together for either. I don't have anything prepared for an emergency. Maybe I should. Did you get all that stuff together, and are you ready?" And I said, "Yes, the stuff for the get-through kit is like the Y2K thing and the bird flu panic. No, we still haven't done anything about getting ours complete, though we probably actually have enough to get through for 3 days. I suppose I could always drink wine, eh? Not as good as water, I know, but I probably wouldn't mind crapping in a rubbish bag nearly as much." Speaking of crap, I actually downloaded the official recommendations and such after 9/11 and distinctly remember that duct tape and plastic sheeting were on the list to protect, in quotes, you in the event of an attack with a chemical, biological, or nuclear dirty bomb, as if it really would. And I remember reading that at the time thinking both that it sounded paranoid and pointless. But there you go. Daniel said, "Damn you, Archer," because Archer got to comment first. And he says, "The ex-Boy Scout in me feels the need to point out that if you're able to boil water, the storage of potable water isn't that big a deal. Of course, having 3 days' worth of potable water is a convenience thing. Here in Florida, we use our bathtubs to store water, but we get more lead time with hurricanes than you would with a volcano. On the subject of pod-safe music, I was just checking out, and then there's a link here, which is a collection of music covered under the Creative Commons license, which is actually what all the PodSafe music is covered under as well. And I said, Daniel, you're quite right, and people may be able to fill their baths for a short while after an event. It depends on where and how bad it is. We can get cyclones, which are what hurricanes are called here, and there's more warning for them, but they're rare and not really severe enough to worry about, not yet anyway. And of course, with global warming, we don't really know if we're going to be getting more severe cyclones or not, but the suspicion is that that may happen. I go on. I checked out the PodSafe music site a little, but apparently to download, I need to install BitTorrent, which I haven't yet, or something else I haven't heard of, and I can't remember what it's called. But I'll check out more thoroughly when I have more time. Busy week this past week. And this past week actually was the busiest week of the month for me. The first week of the month is always busy. But things are getting back to normal for the next 3 weeks, and so I'll have more time for things like that. Tim Carmel said, I had no idea that New Zealand was in an earthquake zone, but I guess it's like living in Tornado Alley when I was growing up in Texas and Oklahoma. When it happened, the sirens blew, and everyone's attitude was, oh, it's another tornado. Look outside and see if we should go to the storm cellar. It's like living in the city. You get desensitized to the dangers around you and just deal with it day to day as it happens. Great show. Sorry I haven't commented in a while. And I said, you know, tornadoes always scared me more than potential threats here ever have. Part of it was the long process, watch, to warning, to sirens, then waiting to see if things cleared up. And this happened every year. The events here hardly ever happen, so it's easy to forget about them completely, in Auckland anyway. And that's basically because there are parts of the country that experience things like earthquakes more frequently than we do in Auckland. But because they don't... In Auckland, we normally don't get ones that you can actually feel. It's very easy to forget that they're even possible, unless you see a get-through commercial or somebody reminds you in some way. Anyway, I go on. Don't worry about commenting. Of course, I love comments, but like Archer says, if you feel obligated, it's not fun anymore. Comment when and as much as you want, but don't ever feel obligated to do so. After all, I don't get around to commenting on your shows all that often either. And of course, he's host of Go Rainbow Radio, and there's some who call me Tim. Both great podcasts. But I mean, that's true for anyone. I mean, I love comments. Obviously, everybody loves comments. But no one should ever feel obligated to leave a comment. But by the same token, you should never feel restricted. And if you want to comment on something, by all means do. Comment. You can say as much as you want. I don't censor. Moving on, then, is Walt, a new commenter, who says, Hi, Arthur. Your talk of the Get Ready, Get Through campaign made me so happy I don't live in New Zealand. My partner is very reactionary when it comes to stuff like this. Reactionary to the point of overkill, actually. We were living on things he bought for Y2K for months and months into 2000. I can only imagine what sort of mess he'd be working on right now. I haven't commented on your show before, mainly because I only just recently started listening. I'm through all of the shows now, and there were many things I wanted to comment on, but it's probably too late for most of them. On the subject of your accent, bet you thought that this topic was over already. To me, you definitely have that upper Midwest thing going on, bordering on Canadian, actually. I don't know what you sounded like pre-New Zealand, so I don't know if your current influences brought out a more Canadian sound to your accent or now. I don't really hear that much New Zealand in you, except when you say words like day, and it's very obvious. Of course, I have no idea what he's talking about for day. I mean, people have said that before, and I don't know, maybe I should record... Well, I do record myself, but maybe I should actually listen and see if I can hear it, but I just don't. But anyway... The next section I'm actually going to return to later. He asks some questions, and once I'm done with all the comments, I'm actually going to go back to that. I know it's a little screwy, but that's the way I'm going to do it. And finally, he ends with, I'm really enjoying your podcast. I don't think a lot of people have the ability to sound comfortable doing a single-person podcast. You certainly do, and that makes listening to your show all the better. Walt. And I said, Welcome, Walt, and thanks for the comments. I think we're near the opposite of your partner, taking things a little too much for granted. But I know it's sensible to be prepared, and I really want to get there. Perhaps we will, without overkill, hopefully. I say, always feel free to comment on any show. Blogger sends me an email to let me know, so I don't have to monitor them for new comments or anything. As for the accent, no, it's one of the two subjects that will not die. I often get people in New Zealand thinking I'm Canadian, actually. These days, maybe that's safer. And oddly enough, just yesterday... The air conditioning man was here finally to move the sensor for the air conditioning. And he said, so where in the U.S. are you from? Which is really quite unusual. Most people, a little more vague because they're not sure if I'm American or Canadian or what, and so they'll just try to be a bit more oblique and say, well, where are you from originally, or something like that, and then let me answer it. But he said that he thought that I still had a strong accent. So there you go. I mean, there's all sorts of different opinions. But a lot of people here have thought that I'm Canadian, and I always have actually told them, but there are times I think to myself, I wonder if I should just play along, but I never have. But to digress for just a moment, the air conditioning, as you might recall from earlier episodes, was too hot, and they were coming back to move the sensor, which was originally up in this unit in the attic called a plenum, and they were moving it down to the actual air intake, because it's closer to the source, closer to what we're feeling. And it was supposed to come on a Saturday and couldn't come. Then it was supposed to come on the following Monday or Tuesday, didn't arrive. And then the next thing was that he was coming yesterday, which was Monday. And he did. He arrived. He was actually early. And he moved it down and to a better place. And we've tested it, and the temperature inside the air return is what it is supposed to be, 18 degrees Celsius. But if you put it anywhere in the house, it still will show 20 to 22 degrees Celsius, which is much warmer. So now we're going to see if we can't get the sensor somehow integrated with where the actual controller is so that the two can actually, like, you know, talk to each other. But so that's where that's at. I just wanted to mention that before I forget, because I know I would. Anyway, back to Walt's comments. I told you I skipped the bit about questions, and I said, those are all excellent questions, so much so I'm going to talk about them in my next podcast, which, of course, I will. And then I concluded with, thanks for the kind words, too. I'll be honest, it's good to get positive feedback. It's really encouraging. And it is, because there are times when doing this sort of thing, it's easy to think, oh, well, what's the point? I mean, you can look at download statistics till you get all bleary-eyed, but it doesn't tell you anything. I know a few of the people who listen to my podcast, but the vast majority I don't know, and probably never will. Most people who listen to podcasts or read blogs never leave a comment, so I probably have no hope of ever interacting with most of them. So obviously I appreciate comments, and I also welcome criticism as well. But to honestly, getting positive feedback is important, because there are times I know that things don't go quite as well as I would have liked, and it's good to have somebody say something nice to make you feel like you can move on from there. And so, of course, anyone should always feel free to leave a comment on my blog, amarins.blogspot.com, or send an email to me at amarins@yahoo.com as well. Okay, last is a comment from Josh, who says, I grew up in Illinois, so I have a lot of memories of the siren. Now living on an island, I have to worry about hurricanes, too. Neither are much fun. Anyway, thanks for playing our music. And he's from the Spring-Heeled Jack's original swinging jazz band, whose song I played at the end of the last podcast. And I said, the first time I encountered the siren was when we moved to Lake County, Illinois, when I was 9. They had a volunteer fire service and used a siren. Scared the crap out of me every time. They still do. I'm just cooler about it now. And when we moved to Paro, which is down in the Waikato, they also had a volunteer fire service and also used a siren to summon them. And every time that siren went off, which admittedly wasn't that often, but every time it went off, it just took me right back to being that 9-year-old kid being scared shitless. But naturally, I wouldn't show that. I was like, oh, okay, yep, everything's fine, even though it was anything but. But I go on to Josh. I said, thank you for putting your music up in a pod-safe environment. I really admire that. I apologize for screwing up the link. I just realized today and fixed it. I plan on playing some more of your music in future podcasts. First of all, about the link, I somehow got the... Because I did two bits of PodSafe music, I put the same link for both of them accidentally, and I do apologize for that. I fixed it in those show notes, and I'm going to play another of their songs at the end of this podcast, and I'll be sure to get the right show notes, and I'll put a link to their MySpace page. Now, what I think is interesting is that bit of music is from a concept album they call The Dickie Comstock Show, which is apparently inspired by Bob Hope Show and Prairie Home Companion and things like that. They have put together a bunch of people who've played music or sung or acted or what have you to create this concept. And some of the music is really quite interesting. Some of it isn't necessarily music I would listen to ordinarily, which is fine. There's no reason why it has to be. But I have to admit that the more I listen to that, to the song I played last week, Moving to New Zealand, the more it's growing on me, to be honest. I'll talk about the song at the end of the podcast, but I'm playing another of their songs this week, and I'll get the links correct. But now I wanted to go back to the paragraph in Walt's comment where he asked questions. But first, thanks everybody for your comments. And of course, feel free to leave a comment at any time, or not, as you see fit. So Walt asked, I'm kind of curious as to what was the biggest bit of culture shock for you when you first arrived in New Zealand. I think I'll just do them one at a time. And the actual answer to that is the biggest thing were the littlest things. There were some things I noticed. I couldn't get particular products in New Zealand at the time, things I was used to buying in America and I couldn't buy here. Not a whole lot of them, to be honest. Aspirin actually was one of them. Part of that was that it was sold under a different name. The common product name was Dispirin, but you couldn't get big bottles of aspirin like I was used to getting at the local pharmacy or what have you. It just didn't exist. People used Panadol or the equivalent instead, which is paracetamol. In America, it's usually called acetaminophen. It's the same chemical. But they didn't use aspirin, which is what I was used to. And at that time, you couldn't get things like Nurofen and stuff like that, which didn't worry me so much. But the point, basically, is that there were certain products that I was used to in America that I couldn't get here. But it was the things like, every time I went out the door, people were driving on the other side of the road. Store signs might refer to something that I wasn't familiar with, so I might not necessarily know what they were talking about. And that obviously got lesser as time went on, but there were tons of little things like that that I was faced with when I first arrived. But because it was, you know, it's a Western society and people speak English more or less, and all those sorts of things. It has a decimal currency, the dollars and cents, all those sorts of things. There weren't major things that I had to adjust to, certainly not like somebody who goes to a country where they don't speak English, for instance. But a lot of those little things added up. And in the first few years, a couple of years anyway, there was quite a lot of adjustment that I had to do. And there were times when I would have given anything to not have to think about things like that. But, you know, time heals all wounds and eventually did move on. He goes on to ask, when was it that New Zealand first started feeling like home to you? And that's actually a really difficult question to answer because it wasn't the kind of thing that was overnight. It wasn't like suddenly I woke up one morning and go, felt that it was home, but it was a gradual process. I arrived in 95, and for quite a while afterwards, first year, maybe two, I spent probably a lot of my time, you could say I was moving forward by walking backwards. I might have been moving forward, but I was facing my home. But then somewhere along the line, I started turning the other way, and I was looking over my shoulder, and then eventually I would just occasionally glance over my shoulder. It's this whole process. Because we came back to America for a visit in 97 and again in 99. And we were planning another trip in 2001. We'd actually talked about coming for Christmas of that year. Had we been still planning that, I don't know if we would have gone ahead with it after September 11th, but everything was off by then. We'd already decided that we weren't going to be traveling. There had been a couple of deaths in the family in late 2000 and early 2001, and it just sort of knocked us a bit. And we just weren't quite ready. And then we had job changes, and we were moving around, and all sorts of different things going on. And, you know, it's one of those situations where just everyday life intervenes and kind of, not gets in the way exactly, but it changes your plans and changes your priorities on a continuing basis. So we just never got around to planning another trip, and not many people have come to visit us, to be honest, or even over all these years. So I haven't had the constant connection in that sense that I had in the early years, and so I probably started looking more here more than I did. So I would say it would be probably sometime after 2001, maybe 2002-ish, thereabouts. Somewhere in the early 2000s. It's really difficult for me to say because it wasn't, as I say, a specific day, time, or event. It just evolved that way, and I only became aware of it sometime after 2002. When specifically, I couldn't tell you. And I actually have thought about it a lot over the past week. I've thought all these questions a lot since Walt left his comment. And I just don't have a really good answer for that, but I hope that gives some idea of how it evolved over time. Actually, to pick up on that just a little bit more, in the early days, there was probably a lot of time that I spent thinking about, and I suppose you could even say fantasizing about, us moving to America. At one point, Nigel participated in a green card lottery. And if you haven't heard of that before, basically what happens is that the government literally holds a lottery where lucky winners receive a green card and they can go and live and work in the U.S. Without having to already have a job or whatever else that you need for a green card. I don't even know off the top of my head. He did take part in it and wasn't successful as it happens, which in hindsight was probably a good thing because a lot of things happened in the family after that and we probably would have wanted to have been here. I mean, we would have wanted to have been here as we were. So it all worked out for the best. Things worked out as they needed to. But because we'd gone through that, there was a part of me that was kind of hoping, I think, that we might go back and live in America. And it didn't happen. And eventually, I stopped caring quite so much about that because while kind of unbeknownst to me, you could say, I was developing my own attachments to this place and becoming more and more at home. So eventually, I didn't even think about things like that anymore. And eventually, the idea of us moving there began to seem quite strange. Although, in fairness, that attitude was helped in no small measure by the current administration. But there you go. Walt goes on, is there anything American you still miss to this day? And there are only a few things that I miss, and not intensely. But among them are root beer, which you can't get here. And to be honest, probably the only reason I miss it is because I can't get it here. Because I don't think I hardly ever had it in America. So being able to go to a professional baseball game, and that too I did once every few years on average. Even though I lived and worked near Wrigley Field, I didn't go there very often. But it's not being able to. But I can see baseball games on ESPN International, so that's not a big drama for me, and I wasn't that big a fan anyway. It's the access. Recently, watching some of the videos, Tim Carmel's videos of Gay Pride made me kind of miss those old Gay Pride events because they were always such fun. We don't have anything like that here, but arguably we don't have quite the same need that we used to have, at least when I was living in America, because it had, even participating in the parade, had political connotations to it. But for me, it was basically just a fun day. And I sometimes miss things like that. Beyond that, it's just, you know, being able to spend time with friends and family, being separated so far, both in time and distance, has meant that we've really missed out on a lot of each other's lives over these years. And I find that kind of sad. But it's the way life is, and, you know, I have the advantage of the internet and cheap long-distance phone calls, and free over Skype, that I have ability to stay connected that, say, my ancestors never had. So, you know, things are remarkably better than they were for them, certainly. But there's not really anything from America that I miss intensely. Some of those products I mentioned before that I missed when I first arrived here are now available here. Or I found things that I would like just as well, or that work just as well, or what have you, depending on what it is. So I don't have any particular thing anymore that I still really miss. Which is a good thing, I think. And maybe it's just another sign of how this is home now. And he asks, is there anything you've discovered in New Zealand that you can't imagine living without, Nigel and the pets excluded? Well, apart from Nigel's family, it would be, and our other friends here, one day international cricket. I'm not entirely joking about that. I haven't actually been to a match in a year and a half, I think. Maybe 2 years. But I really enjoyed going. All of the fun of one day international, it's all the fun of baseball, but without some of the icky things that can go along with baseball sometimes. It's just a fun day, fun summer's day out, basically. But actually, that's not entirely true. A lot of the things that I take for granted here now, many of them weren't available in the America that I left, or that we last visited in 1999. And some of them may be available now, and I just don't know it. So some of the things that I would miss actually might be there now, but for example, when we were last in America in 99, we were making one of our favorite recipes for some friends, and it called for tinned mangoes, which, of course, wasn't available in local Jewel-Osco, and it wasn't available in Treasure Island, which was the one store where everybody in Chicago would go to get exotic and unusual things. They didn't stock it, so we had to use peaches instead, which is not right, just not right. But there are some products here that I probably would rather not do without. Actually, if you'd asked me this a few years ago, I probably would have said meat pies, because when I first arrived in New Zealand, I used to eat meat pies every day for lunch. I used to like steak and cheese, or mince and cheese. Beef mince is what ground beef is called here. Those are my favorites. But I don't eat as much meat as I used to. In fact, very little meat, really. So I don't miss those quite so much. And I also know that they're quite high in fat, so I'm not quite as keen on them as I used to be. I mean, I still do like them, but I hardly ever have them, maybe once or twice a year now, if that. So there might be some food items here and there. The quality of the produce and whatnot is really quite good here. But, I mean, you can get that in America, especially if you've nowhere to shop. So, no, that's not it either. I could be glib and say the climate, the milder climate as compared to Chicago. But, I mean, obviously I could find that in other parts of America as well. It's more an attitude toward things. For example, all of the cleaners we buy, I don't buy the trigger things over and over again. I just buy a refill, as you do for most things like that here. There's a very practical approach to a lot of things here, and I would miss that. And I would miss the easy and laid-back political system where you just don't have the sharp partisanism that you see between the Republicans and the Democrats. I would definitely miss that. And the easy access to government and people in government as that you have in New Zealand that you don't find in the same way in the national political scene in America. But apart from that, I don't think there's specific things. However, I would find it very difficult to leave now, because all of those little things that right now I think, oh yeah, it's no big deal, if I had to leave them behind, they'd become very big deals very quickly. And I just, at this particular moment, I can't imagine living anywhere else. But one thing I did learn is to never say never, because if anybody had asked me, well, I suppose if you go back 15 years ago now, if I'd ever considered living in New Zealand, I would have said, of course not, because I never would have. But, you know, life arranged itself as it did, and I'm here, so I would never say I will never live in America again, because I just don't know. At the moment, I wouldn't. I wouldn't move tomorrow, or the next day, or probably doubt very much next year. But hey, you never know. You never know what the future holds. So that's a roundabout way of not answering the question, probably, or any of the questions, probably. But I tried really hard over the past week to think of some specifics for those questions, and I honestly couldn't. And I think as much as anything that it all comes down to just how I just feel at home here and everything seems average and normal to me, that I can't pick out specific things that I miss about my homeland or things that I would miss about New Zealand if I were to leave, or even when it began to feel like home, because it, in a sense it feels like it always has been, even though I know that's not true. And it's very hard for me to pick out specific examples. But this may come up again. Maybe when the time of my anniversary comes around in November, anniversary of arriving in New Zealand, maybe I'll be able to come up with some more. I got distracted a moment ago because we just had a wee bit of a power dip, which doesn't affect me because I'm on uninterruptible power supply. But nevertheless, I still don't want to keep pushing my luck. So I should probably wrap this up now while I still can. The song I'm going to leave you with today is also from Springheel Jack's original jazz band, and it's a remix of a song that's actually from the Dickie Comstock show, but this is a remix of Mini Constellation, and I actually quite like this, I have to say. So if you enjoy it, check out their MySpace page, or you can go to the Podsafe Music link, which I'm supposed to put on whenever I play one of their songs. And so feel free to leave a comment on my blog, amarins.blogspot.com, or send an email to me at amarins@yahoo.com. That's all for this Tuesday edition. I'll talk to you again on Friday. Have a good week, everybody. Bye.
And now it gives me great pleasure to introduce our featured act on the show tonight, all the way from Ragtown, Texas. Please give a great big hand to the Springheel Jacks original swinging jazz band.
darling.